Welcome to Blacksburg Walks. Warning, by downloading or streaming the audio walks, you agree to hold Virginia Tech and its employees and agents, as well as the creators of these audio walks, harmless from any and all claims that may arise from your utilization of this project. This shall extend to all liabilities, including personal injury and property damages. Please use caution while walking along and crossing streets. Be extra careful since you're wearing headphones. Stay alert to any possible incident as you would when walking on any other occasion. Hi, my name is Gretchen Allen, and I'd like to ask you to join me today for a walk around Virginia Tech's campus to take a look at wild foods and why they're worth remembering. Our walk today will take us about 45 minutes and cover roughly a mile. Rob says it well.
It's the quality, not quantity, of the journey from getting from one point to another, as far as instead of walking 1,000 miles and just walk 1 mile and see what's in that mile.
Throughout the walk, I might ask if you've reached a certain landmark. If you haven't, pause the audio and resume once you've found it. And of course, feel free to take extra time to look around and explore if you want. I'd ask you now, if you haven't already, to walk into War Memorial Hall and look for the vending machines by the entrance. Pause the tape until you've found them. Close your eyes. Take a deep breath. Relax.
Please wait for assistance. Please place item in the bag.
Could you get me a bag of chips? Sure you could. With $1.50 and the push of a button. Ask anyone else around you, and I'm sure they could accomplish the same task. But what if I asked you to go outside and find something to eat?
No way! I would be very hungry.
Maybe you would even be surprised that I asked. When our food so often comes in boxes and bags, it can be easy to forget where it came from. Arlene learned this while working with some children who didn't know anything about potatoes.
I remember showing some children in New Jersey, there was a group of second graders, and I was showing them a film, and they were showing these African children who were digging potatoes and carrots out of the ground. And this little girl was sitting behind me, and she says, "Oh, Mrs. Lambert, they're eating that stuff and it's coming out of the ground." And I said, "What, do you like to eat French fries?" "Oh yeah, I love French fries." I said, "Do you realize that potatoes come out of the ground?" "No, I didn't know that." So see, I mean, that it never would have occurred to me to say to a child, "You know, potatoes come out of the ground." But you go to the store, and if you've never seen anyone growing things.
If you've never seen anyone growing food, only ever gotten it out of a store, how would you know? Have you ever seen a potato in the ground? Did you know that the plant components of potatoes are poisonous? Tomato plants too. I didn't know myself until I heard it from Ian and Rob. It might be easy to laugh about the little girl and her French fries, but in our daily lives, it can be all too easy to forget about the connection between our food and our environment. Let's remind ourselves about that connection. We're going to go for a walk today to find some edible plants around campus. This means seeing things we see every day in a new way. Along the way, we'll be hearing from some members of our community who generously offered their time, knowledge, and stories to help me learn about wild edibles. I'll let them introduce themselves.
My name is Rob Speeden, S-P-E-I-D-E-N, and I founded the Natural Awareness Tracking School in 2002.
So I'm Jenny Schwenke, and I am the garden coordinator for the YMCA Hale Community Gardens.
Well, my name is Arlene Lambert, and I grew up in Blacksburg. I was born in 1940, if you want to know how old I am. My parents bought this property at 600 Bishop Road in 1970. And my mom died, and my two other sisters weren't interested in the property, and I was. So I purchased the property from the estate. And my intent is to have this left as open space.
My name is Jeff Kerwin, and I am a retired professor and extension specialist here in the Department of Forestry at Virginia Tech.
I am Ian Cobb, Ozan, born and raised in Blacksburg. I love this part of the world. I'm here to talk about food and my experiences with wild foods, I guess, and people who like wild foods.
Of course, with wild edibles, you need to be really careful. Eating certain plants can be harmful or fatal. I don't say this to scare you, but just to remind you to be absolutely sure of what you're eating before you taste it. It's also important to note whether something has been treated with pesticides. What we see today is all safe to taste. Don't worry, I tried it all already.
They're not spraying these. Yeah. In fact, most people don't even know this is edible.
It's true most people don't know much about wild edibles. The very idea of a wild edible can be a bit intimidating or even scary.
My girlfriend was the funniest thing. I took her down a few summers back to the New River, and there are all these wineberries everywhere, you know, the little red raspberry looking things. And I just grabbed a handful and I started eating them. And she walks up to me with this, like, you know, horrified look on her face and just slaps my hand and knocks all of my berries on the ground. I'm like, what are you doing? I just picked those. And she goes, you can't eat those. I was like, I am. They're in my mouth still. I've been eating them. She goes, no, they're berries. I'm like, yeah, they are. And they're in the woods. Yeah, they are. She goes, you can't eat berries in the woods. I'm like, no, no. And
gaining a knowledge of what's edible around us can help us feel safe. So let's get started and go find a wild edible. If you're facing the vending machines, turn to your right and push open the doors. Really feel the fresh air as it hits your face. Let your shoulders relax and your eyes open up to take in everything around you. You won't find any edibles if you aren't looking. After walking through the doors, you'll see a patch of grass to your right. Walk over, bend down, place your hands on the ground. Our food comes from the dirt. Plants have an amazing ability to take water, soil, sunlight, and air and turn it into food that fuels our bodies. To your far left, you'll see a set of stairs that leads up and away from the drill field. Follow the stairs and continue to walk straight along its path. Has anyone ever told you about a service berry? I'll show you one. Continue on this path. It will end in a Y. Take the short staircase to your right and follow the path away from Dietrich Hall. Look for the open grassy area to your right and 8 similarly sized trees. These are the service berries. Go ahead and walk up to one. Touch it. Look at it up close. It might not be the right time to eat it, but you can still get to know the tree.
And the fruit comes out in June, and it's like a blueberry on a tree. You can actually eat the bud itself. So go ahead and break it off and taste it. And it tastes like almonds.
The almond flavor makes sense, because the almonds, along with the service berry and many others, are all in the rose family. Have you ever heard of a puffball? A puffball is a type of mushroom that can grow to be the size of a basketball. Arlene found one on her property and took it to the farmer's market.
We took it down to the farmer's market, and people would, of course, coming up and say, what is that? Where did you get that? And then there were people who were saying things like, oh, I've seen those things before, but I didn't know you could eat them. So that's the thing, that's where we have lost. Mm-hmm. I think that people at one time would have commonly known that.
I mean, being able to pick the right food is something that was a knowledge that we had before we developed language. And it's just fading away now.
But why? If people once knew what a puffball was, why don't they anymore? Let's take back a bit of that knowledge. Turn your body so that your right shoulder will be facing towards Dietrich Hall. Look for a dark gray path lined with lampposts that leads back down the hill. In the distance, you'll see a wooden trellised archway. Head down the short steps and towards the wooden trellis. After passing under the trellis and continuing on the same path for about another 50 steps, you will see a large evergreen on your left and a plaque that says John B. Grantham. If you haven't found it, pause the audio and continue when you found it. This is a Douglas fir. Like many evergreens, it makes a great tea. Try a needle. It will always be in season, so there's no excuse not to. Really crush up a needle in your mouth until the flavor comes out. What does it taste like?
Sort of like oranges, citrus, and so you can make a tea out of this, and that's another good source of vitamin C.
What do you think? Turn around now so the plaque is behind you. Do you see the bridge? Walk across it, down the stairs, and then take a left under the archway. Pop quiz. Can you name the tree reaching over the railing on the bridge? It's a dogwood, Virginia state tree. When it's blooming, it's hard to miss the gorgeous four-petaled flower. And in the winter, you can recognize its Hershey Kiss-shaped buds. Have you passed under the arched passage and seen a sign for Smythe Hall yet? If not, pause the tape and take a moment to catch up. If you just pass the sign for Smythe Hall, you'll see three tall evergreens off to your right. They're northern white cedar. Their leaves are flat and yellow-green.
This one would be used for a tea, and the French called it arborvitae, which means tree of life, because when they had made the voyage across the ocean, and they were generally up in Canada, St. Lawrence River, and the Great Lakes region. Anyway, the Indians would make a tea out of this and give it to them, and it's high in vitamin C. You should never be vitamin C deficient here on campus. If you are, it's your own fault.
The French learned about wild edibles from native people. Some people learn about wild edibles from teachers, neighbors, or at summer camps. Jenny remembers learning about some from a camp counselor.
And the same guy, I think, showing us that the little green aphids on the bottom of the leaves, they're really sweet. They're delicious. I would never eat a bug if you told me to right now. No way! Except I will eat those little green aphids.
And many people learn about wild foods from their moms. Maybe you did too. Continue to the drill field. Go ahead and cross the street. Across the drill field, you should see Burris Hall, the tallest building that looks like a castle. In front of it is a great big oak tree, surrounded by a patch of bare ground. Cut across the drill field over to that tree. While talking to people about wild edibles and what they know about wild edibles and how they know, I've started to think that women play a really key role in all of this. Arlene showed me some watercress, an edible green that grows in and around water. And I asked her how she knew about it. And how did you learn about watercress, or how did you?
Now that there again, my mom did that. Mm-hmm. She would go out in the springtime and find watercress.
I asked others how they knew about wild edibles and kept getting a similar answer.
I guess I got started. It really was. Doesn't it always come back to our mothers? Remember that, oh, right, she was always a gardener, and I always sort of, you know, I definitely for a while tried to push that aside, but it kept coming back to that.
My mother always knew a good number of things outside that were edible.
Mom would show me, and I mean, Mom and Dad both being farmers, you know, that was the introduction to it, the it's okay to pick this instead of people or parents saying, no, don't touch that, leave that alone, leaves of three, let it be. It's like there are so many plants with three leaves on it that are good for us, blackberry and strawberry and et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, they introduced me to it. They opened me up to that potential, that possibility. And of course, poison ivy, you gotta leave that alone. So found that out on my own.
Do you know about any wild foods, or maybe how to garden or identify some trees or flowers? Who taught you? And who have you passed this knowledge along to? By now you should have crossed the drill field and reached the big oak tree. Wild edibles can mean animals too, but if you want some protein and aren't in the mood for a hunt, nuts can be a good alternative.
So anyway, we're standing right now underneath this beautiful bur oak in front of Burris Hall, and this is really a great tree here. Acorns was an important food source for indigenous people here in America, and they would make it into a flour. Once again, you'd have to process the tannins out of the acorn, probably boiling it, letting it soak in water any number of times.
Walnuts and hickory nuts are big in this area too. Hickory nuts can even be made into milk. I had no idea.
And hickory itself is an Indian word which describes a milk that the Indians would make out of hickory nuts. They would boil the nuts, they would crack the nuts, smash them, and then take the nuts and the nut meats and boil them in water. And the oils and the nut meats would float to the top, and that's what they would eat. And it's a very important food.
Cross the street again towards Burris Hall. Watch for cars and bikers and people walking with their eyes glued to the ground. Do you still have your eyes wide open? Your ears are occupied, so really stretch your other senses. Take a right and head down the sidewalk. Burris Hall will be on your left. Continue down this path. You'll pass a sign for Patton Hall, and then take a left up the stairs just past the red newspaper box. So when did we start losing our knowledge of wild foods? Was it fast foods? The appeal of convenience? A lack of time?
A lot worrying. The society today, because people are fascinated with new and improved technologies and better ways of doing things, and then they're, you know, flip that coin over, and there are people that are interested in the old ways and traditional ways and keeping that. So.
But why is it that our culture, my culture, doesn't seem to value this knowledge? I know they used to.
This is the way people lived. This is the way if you didn't know how to grow things and can them, you didn't live to tell about it.
Maybe with grocery stores and drive-thrus, we just don't need to remember.
There are some places in the world where there's a pressure for that, but there's really no pressure here. And so it's just kind of, I guess, up to people just to pass it on to the children. For me, my real motivation to learn this is just so that some piece of it is still around, I guess.
If you've walked up the stairs, you'll see a sign for Holden Hall to your left. Right behind the sign are a pair of matching trees. Do you see them? Maybe you're familiar with them. They're crab apples.
Crab apples are they're a native fruit. My guess is that they were planted by native people. The three big creeks that run into Christiansburg at one time was called Hans Meadows, which indicates that the Indians had already cleared the area because it was called a meadow, Hans Meadow. But the three main creeks that flow into it, one creek is called Meadow Creek, which is not surprising. The other one is called Plum Creek, but the other creek was called Crab Creek. And my guess is it was named for crab apples. So Europeans come up to a crab apple, they bite into it, and it's very, very sour, and they assume that this is kind of a worthless fruit, not really meant for mankind. But if you come back in the wintertime, after these fruits have had a chance to soften up and sweeten up, they actually get quite good. I've seen this thing loaded, and other crab apples loaded with fruits, and just perfectly, not just edible, but delicious right off of the tree.
So why does this stuff matter anyway? Why should I care about wild edibles? Well, here's something to think about. Biophilia is an idea introduced by Edward Wilson, which literally translates to mean a love of life and living things. The theory proposes that we are all drawn to nature and natural things by our biological makeup. What do you think?
That only makes sense to me. I mean, that would, to me, that just brings to mind, duh, you know, like, like it just makes sense because, you know, our ancestors all grew up in our nature. So what the concept is coming to mind really is this concept that we're separate from nature, which is only probably a product of the last 100 years or so, or just the Industrial Revolution and technology it's brought with it has separated us from nature. It's allowed us to cultivate and grow more and live in a structure, society that separates us. But on the other hand, it's like you can't be separated from nature. You gotta live, breathe the oxygen and take in the sunlight, and that grows the food that we eat, whether you get it out of a vending machine or walk out here and pick something to chew on.
Think back to some of your favorite memories, your most vivid memories. Where were you? Turn around and head back towards the drill field. Take your time, we're almost done wandering. Find a place to sit for a bit if you'd like. As we've moved around today, have you noticed any dandelions?
Common ones be dandelions, kind of an acquired taste. A lot of people find it pretty bitter. But I was walking with a girl on campus here at Virginia Tech, and she picks a dandelion flower and hands it to me and probably some quasi-romantic fashion. I look at it for about 2 seconds and go, thanks, Sarah, that was pretty good tasting. So that was not what she expected from it.
You can eat dandelions, all of them. Roots, leaves, flowers, stem. And they're really good for you, too. They're a rich source of vitamins A, B complex, C, and D, as well as minerals such as iron and zinc. Dandelions have also been used traditionally in the United States to treat liver and kidney problems, heartburn, and much more, according to the University of Maryland Medical Center.
I've tried to make dandelion wine. I think everyone should do it once in their life and never twice. I took hours. Yeah, I spent 3 hours out lounging around on the lawn just picking up these dandelions. And on one hand, you wasted 3 hours of the day, and on the other, what better use of 3 hours of my life than to have, and all the other things you saw. And so I wonder if, you know, most of the healing effect of dandelion wine isn't in the, you know, pausing to do it. So
I think Jenny has a point. I think there's a lot to be said for spending time outside. And the more time you spend here, the more you get to know about your environment. So maybe you knew about crab apples and dandelions. Maybe you know about a lot of other wild foods. Maybe you don't. But why does it matter? What's the consequence of losing this knowledge?
People don't know how to gather the wild foods. And what's that going to do? Because when you gather the wild foods, you have respect for them. You want them to come back the next year. You don't take too much. You'll leave patches. You'll know where they're at. You tend to them.
We got to know a few wild edibles today, and there are so many more right here in our community.
The white pine.
Puffball.
Persimmons.
Field cresses.
Burdock.
Watercress.
Violets.
Winter greens.
Miner's lettuce.
Rosehip.
Huckleberry.
Sassafras.
Acorn.
Walnuts and hickory.
Sweet Sicily.
Of wild raspberries.
Take the time to get to know a few more. Even if you only learn two names, I bet you'll enjoy the process. And while you're out there, get to know the dirt, the air, the sun, and the rain. And thank them, too. Don't let yourself forget that they feed us. You're right across from where we started now, War Memorial Hall. If you want to know more about getting started with wild edibles, look for some suggestions on the webpage where you found this walk. Close your eyes, take a deep breath, relax.